our unique NUFC podcast in a week where tickets and plans were finalised for Wembley. Fans can take a step back and marvel at how far the club has come. A cup final on the horizon and a classic fixture this weekend against Liverpool. Welcome to Black and White with Arab News.
Sam Maxima keeping it in for Burn. Gordon has come back to Alan Sam Maxima. He could change that here right at the end of the half. Longstaff breaking into the area. What a save. Almiron following up. Fires it into the bottom corner. Their top scorer goes to double figures for the season. And Almiron ends a run of nine games without a
Newcastle
goal.
Newcastle v Liverpool is a magical fixture and it conjures up many great and some not so great memories of games gone by. So who better to join us today than Premier League reporter for the Northwest and author Richard Buxton? But before we say hi to him, it's a warm welcome back to our very own Arab News sports editor, Ali Khaled. Another draw and another somewhat below par performance on the South Coast in general.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's... we were chatting about that this last week. I don't think it's too much of a concern at the moment. I mean, obviously still unbeaten since losing to Liverpool early in the season. But the concerns that Newcastle have now are different than the concerns they've had over the last few years. But it is obviously something to keep an eye on in terms of goal scoring. It's dried up a little bit. Earlier in the season, we were demanding or saying that the supporting cast, you know, like people like Almiron and Alan St. Maximin should be chipping in. And Almiron did for a while, you know, but, goals seems to have dried up across the team, you know. So slight concern there. Obviously not having Bruno Guimarães play, and a few injuries has affected the team. But you hope, you know, for all the fans' sake going to Wembley that this is, you know, just a temporary thing and maybe they've got their eye on the cup final. Rather than, you know, going into a period of bad form.
Let's hope so. Richard, welcome. It's been a while. We've been desperate to get you on board, but we finally got you. It's great to have you. Listen, I want to get the opposition's perspective from a Liverpool, from a Red side. And of course, you're right ensconced in that, in the Northwest. You look after Liverpool and Everton. Tell us from your perspective, have many been surprised at the rise of Newcastle this season, the meteoric rise?
I think they have, yeah. I think Newcastle, they've gone about things, what you say, the right way. I think when the PIF took over, it was inevitable that Steve Bruce was going to get sacked because naturally that is what happens with any new ownership that comes in. We saw it at Liverpool with Roy Hodgson. We saw it at Man City with Mark Hughes. Even at Chelsea with Ranieri and more realistically, Thomas Tuchel. So it does happen. And I think it was just a case of, can they get the right man in? And I've got to admit, I was a bit surprised to see Eddie Howe appointed because earlier in the previous year, he was linked with the Everton job once Carlo Ancelotti left. And I was quite forthright in saying, I don't think this is the right choice. And that's more because of what Everton needed. Obviously, they went for Rafael Benitez because they needed a manager who had the strength of personality to get them out of the proverbial because they had a lot of problems with profit and sustainability. And it was a team that occasionally was greater than some of its parts. So you needed someone who could hit the ground running rather than someone who could build incrementally, which is what Eddie Howe seems to do best. He did it at Bournemouth. He was unlucky elsewhere. But you look at what he did at Bournemouth and that body of work and that obviously convinced the Newcastle hierarchy. And I think it helped having Dan Ashworth come in as sporting director. Sure. I think that was a big appointment and one they couldn't get wrong because you need to have someone who knows the English game and knows how to get the players that Newcastle have got over the past few months. And it all seems to be clicking into gear. And you know, it could have been a very different story. You know, if Everton had got dragged together earlier in the League Cup, they might have been the ones going to Wembley. But then again, if they were coming up against Newcastle, which they did look like they were going to be, I think they probably would have fallen short because Newcastle have been on this great run of form. And you know, there seems to be this buzz around Tyneside. Again, you can feel it from people who go there as visit media and they come back and they say that there's a real sort of uplift in the area. So it seems to be all heading in the right direction at the moment.
We like to think this podcast part of that lucky run since we started, Richard. Ali, listen, Liverpool, your beloved Liverpool, they come to St. James's Park. They'll be coming in buoyant mood after a derby win. And you mentioned in a past episode of our podcast about Newcastle should be wary of a West Ham side who just had a good result and looked a different team. Is that same side Liverpool now after that Derby win? Do you think they might have turned a corner?
I think with West Ham, it was two games. They had beaten Everton 2-0, and then they had the cup game. So they were off the back of two games, and they came, and obviously Newcastle themselves had, you know, plateaued a little bit, and then ended up being 1-1. I think Liverpool were excellent against Everton, who were quite poor. But so it's just one result, really. And there have been a few other games earlier this season with Liverpool where you thought, okay, this could be the turning point. I mean, don't forget they beat Man City at one point. They're okay, that could kickstart the season. It just hasn't happened. So I'd be very careful to think that Liverpool have turned the corner completely. But, you know, in terms of, you know, mood, as you say, they come in, it's, you know, infinitely better than what it was like a week ago. There was genuine fears that they'd lose to Everton as well. And I think the game, I don't think it's going to suffer in any way as such. I don't think either manager will take it lightly or rest players, but both have big games coming after that. Liverpool got Real Madrid on Tuesday, and obviously Newcastle have the cup final. So maybe, you know, like eyes are a little bit at games, but if Liverpool are going to get anything out of the season in the league, that they have to win this. And with Newcastle, yeah, they've so many draws recently. So you've gone from what I thought was a position of strength in third place. And now obviously Manchester United have gone ahead. And so Newcastle need to be careful. I don't think they can afford too many drop points. You know, like the unbeaten run is fantastic. But when you have so many draws, you know, obviously they add up to.
You don't stay in the top four with draws.
Yeah, unfortunately that's what's up.
Interesting. Richard, it's a $1 million question. And there's no right or wrong answer. Some of the finest haven't been able to answer it this season. But as a man on the ground, I'd love to get your take on it. Our weekend opponents, Liverpool. What's this cause? What's the general malaise at Anfield this season in your eyes?
It feels like the shutters have almost been put down by the owners, Fenway Sports Group, over the past few months. Obviously, we know that they're looking for an investment or even a takeover offer. But those bids don't seem to be forthcoming, and everyone seems to be gravitating towards Manchester United. You see Dubai, you see Qatar, you see Jim Radcliffe, Elon Musk. They're all fighting it out for a $6 billion valuation, and Liverpool are priced in at a few billion less, and they can't even attract offers. So that's a bit concerning. But also, the knock-on effect of that is that you have people like Mike Gordon, who was the go-to guy for Fenway on the ground on Merseyside. He's stepped back from the day-to-day running. He's delegated to the CEO. And then off the field, there's a lot more factors at play. They lost Mike Edwards, the sporting director, last summer. And then his replacement, Julian Ward, stepped up. And within 6 months, he's announced his intention to leave at the end of the season. You have data analysts who are leaving at the end of the season. The club doctor left at the start of the season. There's been a lot of flux at the club. And I think that's had an impact on the on-field results, especially because you look at Liverpool's stats, they conceded 12 times the first goal in their opening 21 games. Now, you compare that to other Premier League clubs, mostly, with the exception of probably Tottenham, it's teams down the bottom end of the table who are doing that. It's Wolves, it's Everton, it's Villa. You know, if you're looking for people with a higher tally, it's only really Southampton and Bournemouth who've sort of fallen behind early in games. So there's a lot of things going wrong, and people are asking questions about various departments on the pitch. The question of the defence, because it's not been settled. The question of the midfield, because it's starting to show its age. And even up front, because Darwin Nunez hasn't really enjoyed the vein of form that everyone thought he'd bring with his hefty price tag. And obviously the loss of Sadio Mane has been questioned as well. So there's a lot of things that are sort of going wrong. And I don't think as well that Klopp being questioned about the seven-year syndrome that supposedly was a factor in his downfall at Mainz and Dortmund. Is helping, because he's having to almost weekly dispute the suggestions that in his seventh full season he's going to walk away because he's lost the energy, he's lost the momentum, he's lost the support of the dressing room. And I think it's just a perfect storm of all those things, really.
Agree, Richard, Ali? I wanted... Yeah, 100%. Richard, I wanted to ask you another question. I mean, obviously you've written about this. It seems like, you know, the intensity that Liverpool played at under Klopp for the last 5 years, and obviously City being, with the exception of one season, almost that one step ahead. And obviously Manchester City's drop-off in form is not comparable to Liverpool's, which is, you know, obviously their form is a lot poorer. City are still top after all. But you could see that they are not playing quite to the intensity. Do you feel like maybe, I compared it recently to like two fighters that have punched each other out a little bit. And in Liverpool's case, has what they've done in the last few years, the intensity they've been playing at, almost no margin for error, an incredible amount of points, and last season going for all those trophies, has that, you know, physically and mentally, you know, on top of all the issues that you mentioned, but like, do you think it mentally affected them, you know, as much as physically going into the season?
Quite possibly. I think with things like this, where you have a team that's been together for many a year, I think Liverpool's current crop of players have been together since 2017, and you look at the teams around them, people like Tottenham, you'd include Newcastle in that now. They've always refreshed it. There's always been, you know, changes that sort of, it's almost like a change under the guard, really. And Liverpool sort of stayed loyal to the players who stayed so well. I mean, I think even in the lockdown season, or the first half of the lockdown season when Liverpool won the league, they were happy to keep Adam Lallana on the books and use him to the very last minute. He was going to be a free agent at the end of last season, and Klopp retained the faith with him. So I think loyalty maybe is a bit of a crutch for Klopp, and it can be his undoing if it's kicked away, because at some point these players are going to show their age. I was at Anfield on Monday night when Jordan Henderson was in midfield, and he looked every inch of his 32 years. Some players are going to show their age. Not everyone's like James Milner, who can play like the Energizer Bunny forever. They will have limitations, they will have drop-offs. And I think when it's happening collectively, there's going to be a natural downturn. But I think the way Liverpool have plummeted this season, you could say in hindsight the warning signs were there at the back end of last season when they were sapping their energies after 63 games in all competitions. And that conceding the first goal was creeping in then. I think it was four of the previous five games. They shipped the first goal, even though they won most of those games with the exception of the Champions League final. So it could be a factor that, you know, a team that stays together sort of succumbs together. But Klopp will dispute that, because he believes he's not too loyal. And if he does have to ship players out, or players have outlasted the welcome, he will release them or sell them. But there is a feeling that the collective, because there is so many players that have been there together for such a long time, that maybe there is a natural drop-off point now.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. It's a fascinating subject, and for all clubs as well who do undergo this change. I'm not so sure that Man City aren't far away from a similar exercise as well. Ali, Newcastle could do with a fully fit goal scorer. Callum Wilson, again out on the weekend, Eddie keeps saying, as a precaution, tight hamstrings yet again. But, you know, if he's back and he's fit, I'd stick him in. Isak, he started him, but he didn't look great, but he played well in his debut against Liverpool. He's got a conundrum. Who does he start, or does he play them both?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a conundrum, as you say, but even a bigger issue is the cup final, I think, you know, because if Callum Wilson is not 100%, I mean, do you risk him, you know, because any sort of injury and he's out of like the biggest game Newcastle have had in decades.
Sure.
And so I wonder, I feel like, I don't think Eddie Howe will rest players for this match, because it's still really vital. And probably in the long term, as I said last week, they shouldn't. Everybody wants this cup. Everybody has been waiting for a trophy for decades. But inside the club, and certainly for Eddie Howe, finishing in the top four would be really important, you know, in terms of like the progress of the club. So I don't think there'll be any easing off in this match. But picking the players who have been injured might be a bit of an issue. And I mean, we did say Alexander Isak deserves a run. So probably go, you know, I don't know, you know, maybe like still go with Isak in this game and save Callum Wilson for the cup final.
Richard, what's the news coming out of Anfield? How can you see Liverpool lining up for this one?
Possibly quite similar to the Merseyside derby, to be honest. I think that was the way Klopp, I mean, I think it'll be a different challenge. Obviously, Everton didn't really lay a glove on Liverpool. But Liverpool obviously were helped by that turnover and transition that led to the opener from Salah. But I think the way Liverpool set up, they've got quite a decent starting lineup in terms of the players that they can, you know, cause problems. I mean, you look at Stefan Batisic, the young midfielder, who's become the sort of standout player this season. He's only 18, 19 years old, and he's incredible. What he does, his maturity on the ball is second to none. He was so confident in the game on Monday night. He was doing back heels in possession. So there's clearly players there who can make a difference. And you wonder if the goals for Salah and Cody Gakpo will reinstill some confidence in them. So I think Liverpool will probably go with a similar lineup to what they had on Monday night, obviously injuries permitting. But there didn't seem to be any noises coming out of the camp that there would be any after that game.
Interesting. Ali, the point, and again, I don't want to be coming over negative, although I'm looking back at the script already, and I feel like I'm just asking a couple of questions here, but given what Richard's just said, and given the mainstay of Newcastle this season, having been their back four, they didn't look at the races against Bournemouth. They were caught out from a set piece. They looked leggy at the back. I thought that Dan Byrne had the second of a couple of poor games, and Fabian Schär wasn't his normal marshalling self. If you add that to the slight malaise up front, then it could be a little bit of a concern, or is it just tiredness and after such an incredible run?
I think, you know, obviously tiredness, the form has plateaued for the whole team. And I think, you know, what comes with that, and I'm stating the obvious here, is that Newcastle are not on the front foot as much, you know, so the defence is being tested. Part of that is, like I said, the absence of Bruno Guimarães, who, you know, obviously brings so much to the team. And, you know, when you're not scoring, a few weeks ago and just before the World Cup, Newcastle was scoring, you know, if you're 2-0 up or 3-0 up, really takes the pressure off. And at the moment, they're not doing that, you know. And I think it's just, you know, a natural, you know, consequence is that they're just being put out under pressure a little bit. You know, they haven't been conceding that much, to be honest. I mean, you say they're a little bit more suspect in certain situations, maybe in certain set pieces, but they're still not conceding that much. So, you know, possibly it's something that's not a huge malaise. It's just something that can be fixed. I think the issues are a little bit further up the pitch. You know, they need to get midfield firing again. I feel that's like where it's the most obvious sort of where it's gone flat a little bit. Bruno's not there. Almiron not scoring as many as he did before. And I know it was an exceptional run of goals, so you shouldn't be expected, you know, like of him all the time. But yeah, once Callum Wilson is not firing, you know, you wonder where the goals are coming from. And that's why we've been saying all season he does need help from those behind him. Almiron stepped up. Alan Saint-Maximin, not as much.
Interesting. Ali, I want to stay with you because Alan Saint-Maximin leads us on to both of you. I'm going to come to you first, Ali, then I'll come to Richard. But I was reading, Robbie Fowler's this week slammed the $45 million that Newcastle paid for Anthony Gordon. For a player who hasn't done anything. Whilst I understand where he's coming from, Robbie, and I know we're friends with him, great, you know, legend that he is, surely that's the market, right? And it's a little bit harsh given what people have to pay to see for that.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to, like, judge transfer fears anymore, you know, because of some of the numbers that are going around. I mean, people talk about, you know, the English tax, you know, young English players, you know, you pay over the odds for them. I think 45 million, considering some of the other transfers, you know, like what the Chelsea have paid, for example, for Mudryk and for Fernandes. You know, you think, well, if the going rate is close to 100 million for some of the foreign players, like 45 million just seem a little bit, I wouldn't say cheap, you know, but, you know, Anthony Gordon is highly rated. I think, you know, at some point last season, and Richard would know more than me about this, and he can probably comment on that, you know, he was almost Everton's, you know,
go-to
man, like, oh, the one that they had a little bit of hope into. Although, like, I think that faded as well. And I know a lot of Everton fans have said, you know, like, he hasn't been that great just before the transfer. So I don't know. You wait to see. I mean, like, in the past, if you're sticking to Everton, you know, some of their best players have been picked up by the club, you know, clubs with more money, I suppose, or more ambition, if you want. And, you know, you have Rooney, of course, but then you've had, like, people like Rodwell, you know, on the other end. If he goes on to win a few trophies with Newcastle or perform well, I don't think, it's always in hindsight, really. I mean, I'm speaking in hindsight, then the 45 million would be well spent. It's hard to judge it at the moment.
Listen, now, I'm going to get Richard's take on it now, but if Emilio was 107 million based on that performance against West Ham, I'm a good 10 or 15, I think, in the middle of the park. Richard, listen, Anthony Gordon, from what little we've seen of him so far, I think that I put my head on the chopping block, but say this, that in what I have seen, It's what Newcastle fans love. He gets the ball and he drives forward. He's got a tackle in him. He's not well liked by the opposition. He gets the crowd going. I think he'd be a big hit at Newcastle.
I think time will tell. I mean, I think when if that bid for him that Newcastle got, obviously 40, maybe rises to 45 with clauses involved. If that had come in the summer when Chelsea were bidding supposedly 60 million for him, I think that would have been probably about the right price. My concern is that, and you're right in what you say, he was the go-to guy for Everton last season. He was the only one who really stepped up. He was the sort of the focal point for the fans when things weren't going well. There were games during Rafael Benitez's reign where fans openly targeted him. Some went onto the pitch after a Merseyside derby to remonstrate with him. But that's because they had invested so much in him and believed he was the hope for the future and he would be the one who would drag them out of the mess they were in. And to be fair to him, he did that quite a lot. Last season, he scored the goal against Manchester United. He put some really good performances in. And as you say, Pete, the driving forward, the getting in opponents' faces, putting a tackle in. But for some reason in the summer, and we don't know what the reason for it was, it all seems to sort of disintegrate a little bit. You know, he got given the number 10 shirt, which was a big honour for him. Then he started turning up with the whole Starboy persona. He obviously started changing different things about his personality and his appearance. And then it sort of transmitted onto the pitch. And, you know, I was at Everton's first two games against Chelsea and away to Aston Villa. And there was one incident in the latter game where he was fouled by Tyrone Mings. And he didn't even get a free kick out of it because he'd exaggerated contact that much. And then he went too far the other way. In the next, I think, eight games, he picked up six bookings. So there was sort of a balancing act that he wasn't really on the right side of. And that levelled out a little bit towards the end of the after the World Cup break, but we didn't really see the Anthony Gordon that we saw at the back end of last season. But maybe a fresh start, maybe away from a club that's not in relegation trouble and is constantly, you know, needing to win every week to sort of keep the head afloat. Maybe that'll be the thing that galvanises his career again. But on the price tag, I'm always minded of what happened with Ross Barkley, because Ross Barkley was supposedly going to Chelsea in 2017 for 35 million. And 6 months later, he went for 15 million to the same club. So the value does depreciate in January, contrary to what people say. The market does occasionally depreciate with English players. I think, obviously, Chelsea have shown that it's not a universal rule of thumb, but it does happen with English players when they do have a down in 10 and 14, or they're not as prominent as they were. So it could be a good deal for Newcastle. And as you say, you know, if he's winning a few trophies and he's playing in the Champions League, then it'll represent money well spent.
Brilliant. I just love that phrase there, Ali, that Richard says, if he's winning a few trophies. I mean, oh, to be in my 48 years to win a few trophies of watching Newcastle, how brilliant would that be? Listen, Richard, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, but we can't let you go without doing our traditional prediction. So give us a score for the weekend, Newcastle United against Liverpool.
Tough one, because the last two games have been very closely contested. Obviously, at St James last year, it was 1-0 to Liverpool and a very cagey game, and the same at Anfield in August last year. So I think it's going to be settled by one goal, but whether that's 1-0 or 2-1, I couldn't really hang my hat on it. If I was going to go with the Liverpool side of things, I'd say Liverpool 2-1. And also because of what that represents, if they do get the win, then the 9-point gap to Newcastle is then 6 points, and Liverpool have an extra game in hand over on Newcastle. So, you know, they could be breathing down the neck by the time the back end of the season comes round. So for Liverpool, it would represent probably a bigger victory than Newcastle's in terms of what it means for the top four aspirations.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Not the prediction, but we'll let you off with that. You are representing the opposition. It's been fantastic having you on. Ali, listen, last word as always goes to you as sports editor of our beloved Arab News. It's a monumental 10 days for Newcastle United FC. Give us a prediction for Newcastle against Liverpool first.
So I was tempted to go with what Richard said. You know, I think Liverpool played quite well. They desperately need, you know, the points, and they desperately need just to get any sort of run, you know, and this gives them another opportunity. On the other hand, they have been really poor away from home. You know, if I'm not mistaken, just the one win away from home at Villa. And I don't know. I want to go for Liverpool, say like a 1-0 Liverpool, but I'm going to go 1-1.
Okay, it's a fair shout. I don't normally get involved in these, but I do. I feel that it's one of those late games up at St James's Park on a Saturday, so that means the town will be buzzing. it's a famous old tie. You can go all the way back to Supermac. Forget the entertainers. It's a great tie, Newcastle, Liverpool, Ian Rush, John Aldridge, Peter Beardsley, John Barnes, all of them. You can name them all. It's a special, special fixture. Let's hope that it does the Premier League justice. Looking forward to it. Richard, we hope to welcome you back on to the podcast soon. That's it. We'll be back next week for a cup final special, of course, here on Black and White with Arab News. How are the lads?